Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Code Chat. I'm Jeremy Foster, and you can find me online at codefoster.com or on Twitter at codefoster. And I'm glad to bring Andy on the show today. How are you doing, Andy?
Doing great.
We are going to be talking about Andy and his involvement with Microsoft Ventures and his startup, which is called Rexter. So I think it's a good idea to stage Microsoft Ventures. What is Microsoft Ventures? What's this about? What are we talking about here? And you guys probably know, you've heard me talk before about BizSpark and about the fact that Microsoft loves startups and we like to give free software and services to startups. But actually, Microsoft really loves startups. And so we've engaged deeper and we've created something called Microsoft Ventures. Right. Why don't you tell the crowd what Microsoft Ventures is?
So Ventures is the kind of Uber category for Microsoft, their accelerator, the investment arm. So lots of activities. The piece that we're involved in is the accelerator out of Seattle.
Okay.
And as you probably know, they just went through a selection process, which was quite rigorous, I suspect, in true Microsoft fashion. I understand there were 500 people who went through the application process. And what was neat about this group, and they selected 14 and were housed in the incubator space on Westlake, is that they're all kind of coming together around the concept of digital work, right? And so we're excited because I think what we're doing in the world of kind of managing your social graph and your network plays very, very nicely into the world of how people are being productive today.
So your group is Rexter, and you're one of the 14.
Woo!
Nice.
Bring it.
Yes.
So a couple piece for that. It's been an amazing program. We're a couple weeks into it, or three weeks into it.
Yeah.
So super exciting. They give you a little cash to underwrite, because my team's in LA. They'd get you up here. They give you lots of cool Azure products. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
And allow you to use those for free. And there's two other things. There's a set of workshops that they have, sprints. Mm-hmm. We're actually in customer development sprint now. But equally important is creating opportunities to interact with the other kind of, I'll call them elite companies that are your peers.
Yeah, right.
And so it's classic, you know, you think about classroom environment. You know, yes, it's great to have a good prof, but having students who are kind of the same caliber and interested in similar things has really been super enriching. So we're already building some great bonds and collaborating with some of our classmates.
Yeah, I am thrilled with the selection. You and the other 13 startups that are in there represent some really, really good ideas that people are working on.
We like to think so. We're biased, though.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit biased. Can you tell everybody a little bit about you mentioned that we have these sprints.
Yes.
And one of the sprints that we just finished was the design sprint. What was the design sprint like for your group?
Yeah, so it was great. They have a really talented guy who's actually independent but was out of Microsoft. And what we find when we're trying to think about design and products, most people are thinking about kind of graphics and kind of creative design. And there are not that many people who really understand product design.
Yeah.
Right? And we're thinking about productivity and how it works in workflow. That takes a really kind of special set of skills. And so they went through systematically around kind of what is the story you're trying to tell? How do you use your product to solve that story? And a set of best practices around, you know, workflow. And what was nice about that is we set up a set of kind of milestones for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made that resource available to us every week for the next 14, 16 weeks, so we can kind of unpack the opportunity to take those kind of priorities and execute against those. So it's really just, the sprint was really just a kickoff for a set of collaborations around making our products better.
Okay, so you're talking about product design as being a super category to user design or interface design or any of that stuff.
Right, and they're covering all those
interesting
areas. They also picked in our logos. Like, and it's funny, I was talking to one of my kind of co-founders last night about the logo.
Rexter's logo.
The Rexter's logo. And my God, it's one of those topics that if you've started a company, you're always either trying to change your name or change your logo. And all I want to do is make customers happy. So anyway, it's one of those topics that I'm not a huge fan of because, you know, not everyone likes your logo all the time and everyone wants to redesign it. Everyone's an expert at logos.
Yeah. Even when you're a massive company, still we go through logo changes.
God help you.
We all know.
Getting consensus for 100,000 people is probably tough.
That's right. Okay, well, let's kind of build up to Rexter by talking about, because Rexter's all about your social network.
Right.
Let's kind of build up to that. Let's talk about what networking is, first of all, what social networking is, and this concept of networking in general.
Right.
Is this a modern concept?
Yeah, so no, it's not. And you know, there's always been, and I have to confess, I'm an engineer, so I'm talking about networking from a kind of a skeptical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to think, and I suspect there's some engineers out there who just build great stuff and they will come.
Yeah.
Right? And I've learned, and I've been in the startup world too long, a couple decades now, And I've kind of had to understand kind of the impact of connections to mm-hmm. make things happen. And I think people have always told you, you know, who you know is as important as what you know,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think, unfortunately for us engineers, that's actually true. So knowing the right people is really important to your professional success. And I think also in the world we look at is around how who you know helps kind of creators and builders kind of make their ideas come to life. And as you say, we've always said social networks or connections or mm-hmm. people we know. And I've had the fortunate, unfortunate experience to watch the advent of the web,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I remember, you know, 20 years ago when I had my first job, the idea of kind of having a big Rolodex was, you know, maybe if you had 50 or 100 people, you were like the stallion of networking.
Yeah, right.
And had those big things and you're like a great networker. And of course we were constrained by physical space. If I didn't meet you physically or mm-hmm. you were a neighbor or a coworker, I didn't know you.
And if there's not room in my Rolodex, you're out.
And those Rolexes get bigger and bigger.
Oh, I see.
Fortunately, we're no longer constrained by physical Rolexes. And with the opening up the social graph, you know, kind of email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, our networks have been able to expand at an extraordinary pace.
So, more than I can keep up with.
I mean, in most people. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing this acceleration around the connectivity,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that kind of throttle, that natural throttle of who you knew, that constraint of physical space has been removed. And so now kind of massive connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our users and our technology have thousands, you know, 5,000, 10,000 contacts, mm-hmm. you know, unimaginable.
Yeah.
So the question is with that connectivity, is that just, you know, more noise or is that signal? How do you kind of make that useful?
Mm-hmm.
And so we think a lot around how to translate the potential of this kind of open social graph into value. And so we've been studying that problem for several years because I think with the opening up the social graph, the ability to kind of architect and engage the social graph kind of systematically
mm-hmm.
will be an extraordinary differentiator between kind of, you know, adequate professional performance
okay.
and high performance, right? And why is that? Because if you think who you know does matter, and someone who can harness the power of who you know is going to kick the ass, excuse me, of people who kind of just passive about it,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a game changer. And mm-hmm. I'm willing to tell you that, you know, I went to business school and they teach you about marketing and sales and finance. Kind of navigating and thinking about the power of the social graph will be a business discipline because if you don't do it well, you're going to be in someone else's rearview mirror.
Okay, so one of the things that I always think about with the things that I create and the people that I talk to is the concept of value. What value am I putting together
right.
and offering to people through my blog or through my apps or through right. websites or whatever?
Yep.
What value am I offering? And I'm thinking of my social network. Actually, to be honest, I'm thinking of it only because of our engagement in rethinking what is a mm-hmm. social network. And my social graph.
Right.
So I've got this value. If I don't have a social graph, I have no medium for delivering this value.
Right.
If there's not an app store or if I don't have a relationship with somebody on Twitter or whatever, then I
right.
have no way of
right.
of extending or delivering this value. I don't have a medium. Or if I'm on the other side and I have a strong medium and I have 1,000 friends
right.
on my social graphs, but I don't have anything of value, then I don't have anything to deliver. So you're talking
right.
about the bringing together of these two
yeah.
things, right?
So when we think about realizing the power of the social graph, we've kind of dissected what does that mean. So first, having connections, right? If I'm not connected to anybody,
mm-hmm.
then I can't think about how I engage and develop those contacts into kind of a meaningful collaboration.
Yeah.
So we know there's lots of ways to get connected. That used not to be the case. So
mm-hmm.
we can kind of check the box.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, what do I do? Who should I know?
Mm-hmm.
Right? How should I know them? How should I engage them? Right? There's kind of this question of realizing this connectivity into something that's meaningful.
Okay, so to be clear now, Rexter, it sounds to me like Rexter is a quantification of something I already have. Is it the introduction of another social channel?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. So we're helping you take that the connections you have with a social channel and kind of organize them
okay.
so that you can do two things. One is develop those contacts into relationships.
Okay.
Right? Because I know I could have 10,000, you know, business cards in a shoebox.
Yeah.
Not hugely valuable, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
Like, they're just sitting down there. So we got to think about translating and engaging with those contacts so that they become something more powerful.
Yeah.
Relationships.
Yeah.
Right? Because contacts, and I don't even read your emails from people I don't know. Right? So how do we think about kind of how you allocate your time to people that are relevant to you, right? So that there's some sort of dialogue and engagement.
Now, is there some element of, like some limit to the amount of quantification and science and strategy that can go into something as organic as relationships? I mean, do you have people that argue, you can't get scientific about this, this is relationships, it has to happen organically?
So it's funny, I'm glad you asked that question. So 10 years ago, when I worked at Idealab, which is an incubator in Los Angeles, I was involved with a company called GoTo that then became Overture Services. And for those people probably at Bing and those people who kind of watched the evolution of Google, that Overture was really the innovator around performance-based advertising, search advertising. Mm. Right? And so remember marketing 20 years ago, simply not to be, can't be quantified. Right? We didn't really know. We spent money and we hope it worked. Mm-hmm. Right? It was this ethereal sense of, hey, it's kind of working.
Yeah.
And now think about marketing the web. Very metrics, kind of performance-based, extraordinarily powerful.
Yeah.
We can figure out how to guide our activities to drive, you know, acquire customers and generate revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue, and if, you know, it's probably heretical. Well, that's right, heretical.
Heretical. Mm-hmm.
That's the right word. When you talk to marketers 10 years ago, that we're going to quantify this magical art.
Right, right.
I contend that today we're kind of at the same kind of evolution.
We're just kind of throwing it out
of
there.
Of networking.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're kind of networking. I don't really, it's happening. It's organic. It's natural.
Yeah.
It's like, but I think with the web, in the quantification of activity, in the use of kind of analytics, we can start kind of putting some sort of indicators and start making this kind of more systematic and more intelligent.
You know, in a way, it seems like it's more sincere because now, I mean, I can say, well, I've got, 500 connections in whatever social network, mm-hmm. but do I really? If those are quantified and I go looking through them, I realize that some of those, probably a lot of those.
They're just names.
They're business cards in a shoebox.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're kind of nascent names, undeveloped. And so, mm-hmm. What we're thinking about, and this is like super exciting, right, as someone who's business builder and creator, and that's what I think entrepreneurs are, of how do we enlist relationships? And I really think about the engagement of people around your ideas is enlisting the virtual army,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's cool about this, it's specifically in the world of, you know, let's say startups, and you could be producing a play or starting a not-for-profit or building something, doesn't really matter. When you're kind of the under-resourced startup, you need the virtual army.
Yeah, right.
Hey, when you're Microsoft, you don't need the virtual, you hire a bunch of people. When you're right. A scrappy guy like me building a company, you're like, geez, how do I get this great idea? Of course, I think it's great.
Yeah.
How do I get people intoxicated with idea, enlisted, you know, in what I'm doing to help it be bigger than myself?
Yeah.
In relationships and kind of thinking about that systematically. So I'll talk a little bit about how we kind of solve this problem. Right? And we're not at Social Graph, we're helping you put those contacts to work.
Mm-hmm.
So organizing them around kind of helping you get your job
done. So not just quantifying them and describing to me what exactly I have here, yeah. but also giving me a way to navigate
exactly
and get
right.
somewhere.
Correct,
okay.
correct. So actionability.
Okay.
Right? And what we've found, in today we're primarily servicing high-end sales and business development people, because you think about, for them, engaging the Social Graph directly benefits them in terms of deals
it's their life
made
breath.
And commission. So, you know, that is a very important place in beachhead for us to start.
Yeah, right.
But I think fundamentally long term, as we started, kind of engaging, developing the Social Graph systematically will be a practice for all professionals.
Okay.
But we're starting with the, you know, SEAL Team 6, Delta Force guys who do this every day, you know, like.
Okay, now you and I were talking earlier about something that I think applies here, and that is that whatever role you're in, whether you're this this sales guy who's talking about what your company offers, or you're a developer, you know, working in an enterprise,
right.
not all, but most of us feel like we have something creative to offer the
yes.
world, and we're trying to utilize our Social Graph to do that, to move the needle on our idea,
that's right.
and use others to help
exactly.
that happen.
And so. When you think about it, let's say, keep going down, let's have an idea, and I want it to be a startup. I write a business plan, right? Right now it's a short PowerPoint of what I'm going to do, but, and you think about, hey, what's my product, blah, blah, blah. What we've found is the best practice around building and architecting your Social Graph is thinking about who are all those constituents you need to make your business work. Oh, I may be really good at machine learning. Maybe I need someone at UI and front-end development. So
mm-hmm.
one part of my Social Graph development, in that case, maybe developing other people with technical talents who could be part of my team.
Yeah.
Then I, oh, maybe I need some advisors who actually could think about where this product could work. So I have another part of my social graph I need to enrich.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I need some angel investors, God forbid, right? So I need to go out and develop that part of our social graph.
Maybe some beta testers.
Beta testers. So you think about, you know, those are all people you're asking and kind of enlisting around, first of all, getting excited about your idea and engaging them in your idea.
And if they're not excited about it, maybe there's a reason.
Well,
maybe that's good information.
Exactly. And you probably don't have a relationship. They haven't responded. So we think about kind of building your social graph as kind of a second theory is kind of portfolio management.
Okay.
Go to financial services. You have bonds and equities, and you think about building these parts of your portfolio to allow you to retire and send your kids to college.
Mm-hmm.
We think about the social graph as being something you can invest in order to drive outcomes. Raise financing, hire people, get technology in my team.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you, it's not right. My point is that networking, I used to think is, hey, you go out there and hey, Jeremy, great to meet you.
Let's make this happen.
Why did I meet that guy?
Yeah.
Why am I excited?
Yeah. Where's the value?
So there's a framework. What we're really doing is delivering a framework to guide activity. And the reason we have frameworks and what's important is that because of the ability to connect to lots of people, we can randomly be connecting, or we can be filling out that portfolio in a way that is going to help you do something extraordinary. Right. So this is extremely exciting. I mean, I get goosebumps just talking about it.
Yeah.
And so, and so, how do we do this, right? So let's talk a little bit about how we can do this from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, that'd be great. Let's take a look.
So I'll talk about theory, and we'll actually fire up the app.
Okay.
So we know people are making lots of connections, right? And what we've found, and I'm going to just talk about the salespeople just because it's a very discrete example. They've gotten hyper-connected, and they have thousands, in many cases, of connections.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the more connections you have, guess what? The more emails you get, the more phone calls. And so they're living what I call the vortex. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man, what did I have done? They're so busy doing stuff, and they're so busy triaging their inbox. They're kind of running around like a chicken with their tail cut off.
Yeah.
And like, right, so
it's
what,
not proactive, it's reactive.
It's reactive,
yeah,
and they're just getting sucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is, what they really need is guidance, right? And another analogy I use is, hey, when the road was really simple and it was one way, and and I knew where the traffic was, I didn't need Waze or Google Maps. I could get the old map out and eyeball it. It's fine.
Yep.
Right? And when we had, 50 people in our big old Rolodex, it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
We got 500, 5,000. We need something else.
Yeah.
So to go back to the navigation analogy. So, and I love great navigation technology, especially in Los Angeles, right? You get killed with that navigation, especially traffic sensitive and route optimization. So, what navigation does is it kind of tells you where you are. It knows where you are, and then it intelligently guides you where you want to be.
Yeah.
Right. And so the first thing we need to do is figure out where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'll show you how we do this specifically. But if we can connect all your social graphs, all your address books, your LinkedIn account, your Outlook account, your Google Apps account, and integrate all your contacts into a single list of who you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dedupe them, right? Kind of create a singular view. First of all, that allows us to figure out what the landscape looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But now we need to figure out where you are relative to each of those points. How well do I know them, right? And so because of the digital exhaust we produce, every time I email you, there's on the server log, right? Or every time I call you, there's a call data record on my mobile device. Every time I meet, maybe we have a calendar meeting for this event today, right? So they are digital footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to take those interactions, run those through a scoring engine, value what we think that kind of event had, what it did in terms of moving the needle between you and me as a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, hey, if I email you and you don't email me back, probably didn't move the needle very much.
Right.
But spending an hour together doing a segment moved it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right? So we can look at that history and score that history, right, by getting those logs and the metadata. So not only do we have a list of everyone you know, but through that score, guess what we know? Everyone you know and how we know them.
Interesting.
Pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, that's the quantification.
Definition.
Yeah.
It's awesome, right?
Yeah.
So, and historically, you could do that if you had everything, you had someone logging everything. So, but using kind of digital life logging, we can do that automatically, right? And so now we know what the texture of the landscape looks like.
So the effort is to make this something that I don't have to put extra effort into. I don't have to go fill out my log.
Right.
Okay.
Real time. You can imagine how this fits in the world of CRM too,
right?
Everyone hates CRM because of the data, but you can imagine we can auto-populate it, data into your kind of sales accounting system, CRM system. So we know the social graph, we can score the social graph. And that's pretty cool. So I can look at history and I'll show you how that looks like. And I can prospect against my network and say, hey, who do I know at Microsoft? Who do I know best? Because that's usually a question. Oh, I'm trying to figure out how to get into an organization or talk to somebody. And that scoring allows us to have some transparency around where you should cherry pick. right? And the third thing we found is, how do you proactively go from defense of, you know, showing up and getting sucked into all this activity to offense? Mm-hmm. Go back to the navigation analogy. I'm looking at the map. I have no idea where to go. But it makes it so easy when I fire up my navigation system and it tells me to, you know, turn left in 500 feet and turn right.
Yeah.
So recreate a curated recommendation list of what you should be doing today, right? And what it says is, in each of those lists, and we help you kind of identify those lists, but let's go to our scenario. If I have a bunch of engineers, I have a bunch of investors, those are all lists of people, right? And there could be five lists and they each have 10 or 20 people. Like, who should I be talking to across those 100 people? And we help curate that list and say, hey, today, here's number one, here's number two, here's number three.
And there's reason behind those, right? Like, these are going to meet some goal.
Yeah, I'm going to raise financing. I'm working towards raising financing. I'm working towards hiring my next lead engineer.
Yeah.
And, like, what happens is we start these conversations and then we kind of get sidetracked. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I met Jeremy. He'd be great for an engineer. And then I didn't follow through. And so we help you kind of triage these lists to get them to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hired my engineer. I raised $100,000 for my startup. So smart list management, mm-hmm. waking up in the day, going from, you know, this exasperated defensive posture to, I'm going to come in and kick ass, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to take control of my social graph, work smarter, not just harder, mm-hmm. around how I spend my time. Mm-hmm. Right? That's liberating.
Yeah.
And I think what to me is kind of the disconnect is the power of the connected social graph is extraordinary. But without instrumentation, we're getting pummeled, mm-hmm. right? And what we want to do is flip that so that we're realizing we're into a mastery and kind of we're dominating our social graph versus getting rolled over.
Yeah.
Okay, should we fire it up?
Yeah, absolutely, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's get to this page.
While you're doing that, I love the idea of not only being able to engage with the high value relationships, but being able to kind of dismiss the low value relationships. You know, like having a number, not just a number, but a strategy that helps me to say, yeah, it's fine for me to let this fall off my plate. Because I'm letting things fall off my plate anyway.
Right.
It's just that there's no strategy
to it. It's kind of out of neglect.
Yeah, right.
And it's, as you suggest, there used to be a strategy when we weren't quite as connected of kind of zero inbox. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah,
like, hey,
sure.
I was done. I could go home and sleep it well at night when my inbox was empty.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was the last time you had zero inbox.
It's been a long time.
So
I got down to inbox 48 a few weeks ago.
But now the question is, what happens? You're just leaving. You're just kind of resigning. I can't do anymore.
Sure, yeah.
So my view is, let's do the stuff that matters, use that lens rather than, oh, they fell off my inbox before off the screen before I did something about it, right?
Have you heard the term email bankruptcy?
I don't know, but
that's
I suspect
that's where you just archive everything and you just say, I'm sorry, and if I owed you something, I cannot deliver.
I love those notes when I'm, you know, out of office. I used to try to come back and like see all the stuff. I'm like, please resend when I'm back because I'm not going to read these 5,000 emails. So quickly on the app. So this, I'm going to start because I know you have a bunch of engineers that kind of talk about how the system works. Mm-hmm. So we connect all your interaction system. So this is a Exchange server. Contacts are coming in, inbox, calendars. These, sorry guys, are some Google accounts, right? I don't have it, but on my mobile device, our native app, right? So this is how we kind of suck in the digital exhaust you produce.
Okay.
Right, so, and we produce a lot of digital exhaust, right? If you feel busy, especially as the CEO of a small company, I mean, I am like, you know, the BD guy and the fundraising guy and, you know, so engaging with lots of people. So here's my interaction log.
My goodness.
I've had 191,000 interactions I've been logged in Rexter in the last 3.5 years.
Okay.
So I'm generating about 60,000 touch points a year.
Yeah.
That's that vortex. It's real.
Yeah.
Right? Here, by the way, you can already see that our meeting has showed up.
It's our meeting today. Yep.
Didn't have to log anything, right? Here, it's a phone call, right, to one of the cohort guys last night. So literally everything is getting logged.
Okay.
Right? Pretty freaking amazing, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's on my phone call, email, so on and so forth. I'll click on McCoon, who's the guy who does a great job, but he does a fantastic job, testimonial, running the accelerator in Seattle for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I mean, not totally true, but he's doing a great job changing, I think, entrepreneurs' perceptions of what Microsoft is and the willingness to embrace innovation. So here's McCoon. This, you can see, his relationship quality score is 37.
Okay.
Right? Because we looked at
it. So we've got a number on it.
We've got a number. And by the way, it says, our current is we communicate and have a target of we would like to collaborate.
Okay.
So we translate those numbers into kind of psychic being of like, hey, yeah, you're a 21. I don't know what that means, but it means I know you a bit and I want to know you better, which is super.
Okay.
What else? So we can do that. Let's say, look at McCund. So I've had 130 emails, 11 meetings. you can see the logging of all the activity here.
Yeah.
And you can see, this is where we were in demo day, right? And we started the accelerator here, and bump, 130 emails, say 11 meetings. I can hyperlink into these activities. But this is
I just love the fact that this visual, the realism of this visual all happened without any logging or effort.
You don't like data entry?
I don't like data entry.
No. So real-time logging, right? I'm going to go through a couple of the tabs. So what we're able to do with that logging is kind of score your social graph.
Okay. This is the orientation on the map. Where are we?
Mm-hmm. So I actually just ran this search, so this is from last time, but that's okay. So two numbers I'll point out. I know 6,000 people. That's why I need a system like this. my team knows me plus my team, 12,000. So it's interesting, we have a team of 7 people. Uh-huh. I know half the people that our whole team knows. You can tell we're mostly engineers. And I've done a search of who do I know at Microsoft, right? And it says 18 people. Prashant, actually, McCune should be up here pretty close as well. Prashant shows up number one. He's kind of the guy who helps run the program. And you can see our relationship quality score of 42, emailed him 58 minutes ago. I can also look at on my team who knows him. So Katie, who's my ops director, has a score of 15. Danny has a score of 2. So we can provide transparency of not just who I know, but since we're set up as a team, where those overlaps are.
So you're really working together as a team. If Danny knows somebody, you know him.
Yeah. And if I don't know, imagine Danny knows that person better and we want to have a conversation with that person. I can know that and say, hey, Danny, can you reach out to that guy? Because I know him a little bit and I see you actually know him really well.
Yeah.
And you just had a phone call with him yesterday. Okay. And the last thing I'll show you is think about this as a smart to-dos list, right? And go back to those sales and business development people. We ask them how they're trying to be proactive, and they all have a to-dos list. Right? It's like, oh yeah, these are the guys I must call. And I'm like, well, you know, who's on that list? Renewals, prospects, is a very complex list of people. The problem is it's generated here,
mm-hmm.
right? And when I was choosing from 100 people to talk to, that was probably a pretty decent way to do it.
Yeah,
get 500, 5,000, right? It's pretty hard. So this is a set of recommendations. So Darren's showing up, and they're ordered by what we call urgency indexing.
Okay.
What the hell does that mean? Patented? Yeah. it is the intersection of important things to do today. Right. So if it's not important, it shouldn't be at the top of the list. And it can be done in a week from now, it shouldn't be at the top of the list. So
Okay. What
are those things that are most important? So you can see these are all my lists. These are different kind of lists of people. I happen to have a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you talk to a salesperson, it's usually prospects, clients, referral sources. Much shorter number of lists, but a lot more people on each list.
Mm-hmm.
I, as an entrepreneur, have lots of lists going, right? We have the most complex portfolios because we do everything.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, you know, this is my to-dos list. And we deliver this on your mobile device. And if I call Darren today, the system will know because it's tracking my mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going to move him off the list. It's going to score the interaction, but it will also prompt me to see what happened to your phone call.
Hmm.
Right. So if we're telling you to do the right things, and then we're asking once you've done those things, hey, was it important? What happened? Did you move? How did your field position change?
So we talked about the fact that it's doing things automatically by looking at all my logs, all my digital exhaust,
right,
as you called it. But then I also have the opportunity to go in and add more if that's going to be helpful,
right,
to me.
Right. So you first of all create your first list, right?
Yeah.
Go back to the navigation metaphor. When you get in your car, though we're getting smarter,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't know at 1 o'clock in the afternoon whether you're going to go to the Westlake office for Microsoft or Advanta. Right, you need to tell it where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So these lists are kind of where I want to go.
Yeah.
These are my fundraising guys. These are my business development deals. Now tell me in what order I should be turning to get to, in my case, raising capital or hiring somebody. Who should I be talking to when to get to a win?
Yeah.
Right? So work smarter, not just harder.
Yeah.
Navigation, right? We can't get everything done anymore. The metaphor of completeness as your job is done doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Do what matters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, work smarter, not harder. These are all the things we have to think about, not just what we're doing at Rexta, but in productivity in the enterprise.
I think in analogies, and an analogy that comes to mind here is this, in this latest age, we're moving into an era where machine learning is accessible to your average folks. I mean,
right,
we've had machine learning around for a while. You know, computers can figure out some information that actually exists in big patterns of data.
Right.
And now I'm able to go into something like Azure Machine Learning and drag some boxes and figure something out based on data that's actually there.
Right.
And I see kind of the same analogy here, where I'm moving into enough data that it becomes useless. Like you said, when I had the Rolodex of 50 people, I could work with it. It was something that I could wrap my head around.
And your biggest complaint was your Rolodex wasn't big enough.
That's right.
Now the complaint is too big.
Yeah.
It's too big.
Yeah, and arguably, the 6,000 people that I have in my digital world is less useful than 50 people that I had in a paper world, because I don't even have the 50 people. I don't have that strategy on what should I do today. So it seems critical.
No, that's the disconnect, right? It's like, I assure you, the 6,000 people, the potential of them is much greater than the 50.
Sure, yeah, of course.
The question is, how do you connect your behavior with realizing the potential?
Yeah, well, and before we had 50 people that were perhaps somewhat random. There were some that were valuable,
yeah, probably
some
a bit
that
more
weren't.
Qualified.
Yeah, but now if we've got 6,000, how many of those are high value? If we chose 50, the highest value.
Well, maybe it's 150.
Yeah, right.
Right, but still I have to figure out how to parse through the 6,000
and
kind of engage with those people. Mm-hmm. And the problem with 6,000, I'm getting emails from 6,000 people on my phone ringing and so on and so forth. So,
yeah.
There's an information overload problem. And, go back to, like, imagine, navigating the web of information without, a Bing or a Google.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, how do I,
yeah,
that's
how do
why
I get
Yahoo stopped.
Yeah.
Like, I can't manually inventory
anymore. I can't
index
this, yeah.
And so we got to figure out how to navigate it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same is true with the social graph. But now that we have good search algorithms and we can connect kind of content on the web with intent,
mm-hmm.
hugely powerful.
Totally.
I mean, like, blows my mind.
Yeah.
Now imagine doing something as extraordinary with kind of engaging the social graph.
With real people.
Now
information is great.
Yeah.
And we love engaging with information. But what I love engaging with more than information is people.
You should do some sort of podcast.
I might. I should do that.
You're a people person.
Because I am a people person. I always say that the only thing I like more than writing code is talking about writing code.
I like solving people's problems and making us more productive. And I think the harnessing the power of the social graph is the time has come. And as you said, the data, if the data wasn't there, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, right.
And imagine, like, trying to build a GPS system without having kind of all the geo data.
Yeah, yeah.
We're getting the geo data, we're getting the relationship data, and now we're trying to overlay navigation.
Actually use it.
And it's
that's exciting.
It's a really kind of super exciting, problem to solve. And if we can do it, and I think we're, it's a hard problem.
Yeah.
But I think we're on the cutting edge of doing it, and doing it in collaboration with, someone like Microsoft is an extraordinary opportunity, and we're super excited to be here and, achieve some success together.
All right. Well, hey, let's go ahead and wind down. Thank you so much. This is a fun topic.
I hope so.
Really exciting to talk about. I hope that the crowd agrees. I think you
will. Come on, crowd.
So anyway, best of luck to your business and actually to the other 13 startups. That I love startups. I think that startups have so much courage.
Yeah.
And I see that in the cohort that we're working with right now in Microsoft
Ventures. My wife says we're a little insane, but it's okay. We like it that way.
I've heard that entrepreneurs are the type of folks that will work 80 hours a week to avoid working 40.
There you go. Sign me up. I'm in.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on Code Chat. We're going to see you next time.